Welcome to Life Study of the Bible with Witness Lee, a program provided by Living Stream Ministry and featuring the ministry of Watchman Nee and Witness Lee. Witness Lee, a servant of the Lord for over 7 decades on 5 continents, culminated his ministry with a 21-year, book-by-book exposition of the entire Bible, which he called a life study. And we're delighted to bring you short portions of this spoken ministry on today's broadcast. Now, let's join today's life study.
Job is once again pouring out to his friends concerning the terrible sufferings that God had visited upon him. And in this discourse, he was reliving, so to speak, many of the fond recollections of the glories of his past experience. How often do we dwell on the past when we are languishing in the depths of our present despair? But Job was also drawing upon his past successes in order to build a defense so that he could plead his case before God, a case that was totally built upon his own righteousness. Bob Dankers joined us as we fellowship in this book of Job. Bob, quite a portion that we are faced with here, somewhat in the middle or beginning the latter part of Job, isn't it?
That's right, Chris. Eventually, Job, as you said, he recalls his excellent past and what kind of person he was, and he names his virtues. He was upright, a man of righteousness and justice. He said, I was a father to the poor, the orphans, and so forth. So he was a man of the highest integrity and human perfection. And his friends were trying to convince him that he had committed some sin and God was punishing him because of it. And so here Job, as you said, defending himself first to his friends, and then he was ready to take his case to the heavenly court and present it to God himself to convince God, you know, that there was no reason why God should do this to him. Of course, Job was totally in the dark concerning what God was doing. He thought God was angry with him, that he was judging him in his anger. But this is absolutely the wrong concept. So Job did not understand what was happening to him. And of course, this whole book makes that clear.
Let's talk about that for just a minute, because the common thought, the natural thought, almost our default setting is always this way. We're just like Job's three friends, even as we try to interpret our own experience most of the time. The kinds of sufferings and apparent injustices that Job is going through, you know, caused his friends obviously to conclude that there must be some sin here at the core, at the root of all of this, and God is displeased, and this is your just punishment. And our mind, just, and especially our religious mind, just likes to go down this trail, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And of course, Job was on this trail very much, and his three friends, even more than he was, were on this trail.
Let's look at a couple verses here in Job 29 now to kind of recap. You've laid out that he is recalling and bringing back to remembrance of himself and his friends these wonderful aspects of his past experience and how he was admired and had such a lofty standing. And really, he had the righteousness to back that up. He was such a man, wasn't he?
He was.
And it says in verse 14, I put on righteousness and it clothed me. My justice was like a robe and a turban. So he is really relying here on this uprightness of character and this fine ethical behavior of his to be his justification when he faces God with his case, doesn't he?
That's really true, Chris.
And then I want to come to verse 20 in chapter 30 just to show, as you pointed out, Job was waiting to make this case now, really preparing and expecting to be able to bring this case to God. And in chapter 30, verse 20, he says, I cry unto you, but you do not answer me. I stand up and you stare at me. So the Lord just doesn't seem to be interested in giving Job the kind of platform that he is waiting for so desperately, does he?
That's right.
All right, let's join Witness Lee for the first portion. We'll come back to fellowship some more.
Job does give us a picture of his sufferings. He didn't understand by then, but today we do know what was the reason. It was true that he suffered, but the suffer was caused by God with a purpose. That is, God just liked to take away all his successes. He was very successful, not only in material things, in cattle, in children, in houses. Not only that, but also in the ethical things. He did make up a very high perfection and high uprightness. That was his integrity. He was proud of that. You see, even here, he didn't mention about this, but God took them away in order that he could turn his pursuing. He should not pursue after those things other than God. What God wanted of him is that he would turn his pursuit after God instead of after other things. But he didn't know. He didn't know. He thought he was right, and God did something wrong with him. So he was expecting to have a time to his case cleared up with God. So he was altogether in another realm, in another world, apart from what God wanted.
Bob, this is so foreign to this natural kind of religious default setting that our mind operates in. I want to come back to it. Because if I understood what we just heard correctly, rather than in spite of or in lieu of his successes, almost it was his successes that were causing these things to come upon him. Now, how could that possibly be?
That is really right, Chris. The friends of Job tried to convince him that it was because of his failures that he was suffering all these things. But actually, as you said, it was because of his successes that God had to come in using Satan as an ugly tool to strip Job of all his successes, to reduce him to, let's say, nothing, taking away his material things and then, in a sense, robbing him of his righteousness, his justice. It seems that these things were of no use to him. He was suffering. He couldn't rely on them anymore. So God had him in the position that God wanted him to be in. God wanted Job to realize that in God's purpose for man, God has no intention that man would pursue material things as a sign of success, or even ethical perfection, morality, ethics, righteousness, justice, all these virtues that men prize and consider so highly. And I would say, to some extent, nearly everyone is pursuing these things. We all want to be that kind of person, but God doesn't want us to be all these things or to gain these things apart from him. What he really wants us to do is to pursue him and to gain God. The problem we have is not that we are good or bad. The problem is we are deficient or we're lacking in God himself. And God knew this concerning Job. So he came in to do something to adjust the situation. But, of course, Job had no understanding concerning this matter.
So, in effect, these things that Job had attained and had become a kind of a replacement for God, instead of becoming perfect, according to godliness, and by pursuing God directly, all of these things became his real pursuit, and in an effort just to please God, satisfy God's expectations, so to speak. This is kind of the picture that we're being portrayed with here, isn't it?
I think that's right, Chris.
Bob, let's take a look. Jump ahead now, 12 chapters from where we just were in 29 and 30. In chapter 42, this is kind of the beginning of Job's breaking through the cloud, the fog, not knowing what in the world is going on, and he begins to really get some light. So we want to come to this point because it relates so well to where the Apostle Paul brings us in the New Testament. In chapter 42, verse 5, Job said, "I had heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye has seen you." Marvelous realization here, isn't it?
That's right. We may have heard many things about God, and we may believe all that we have heard, but the important thing is that we see God.
And Matthew, to bring us to the New Testament, chapter 5, says, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." And that is the real goal, not to obtain or attain all of these outward things, material or even ethical, but to see and eventually lay hold of the very God. Let's go back to Witness Lee.
Joe eventually did recognize that in the past he knew God just in a kind of hearing. He heard about God and he believed, but he never saw God. Now, through these strivings and consumings, there was a time coming that he saw God. In Matthew 5, it says, "Blessed are the ones whose heart is pure, for they shall see God." I'd like to tell you, if you have the clear view in the New Testament about seeing God, you could realize seeing God is to receive God into you. In Matthew 5, seeing God is a great reward in the kingdom. If seeing God is just a kind of seeing of God, nothing else, that doesn't mean much. But in the New Testament, seeing God is to receive God, then God will be in you as your element to what? To renew you, to transform you, because God coming in brings certain amount of divine element and add this element into your being. And this element in your being does work over you and in you to renew you, to get rid of all your old elements, right? Then you have a new situation. And this is eventually the transformation. So in 2 Corinthians 3:18, it says, we as a mirror look at God, and that is seeing. Then we reflect him, and then we are transformed. Right? Seeing God could have us transformed into his glorious image, from one degree of glory to another degree. And there it says what? This is from the Lord the Spirit.
Bob, I like the direction we've just turned to here, because it's not solely that God is interested in stripping away the things that have replaced him. His real intent is what he wants to add in place of those things, isn't it? And that's where we come in this portion.
That's right. God's desire is to add his very element, his divine element, his divine life and divine nature into our being, and to replace our old natural human element with himself. This is what the New Testament refers to as transformation. Romans 12, verse 2 says that we should not be conformed to the present age, mm-hmm. but we should be transformed by the renewing of our mind.
Yeah.
In order to be transformed through renewing, we need a new element to be added into our being, and we need our old element to be discharged. And this is what happens when we see God, when we behold the Lord, not in a physical way, but in a spiritual way, in our spirit.
Right.
Something of the Lord himself, his very element, is dispensed or infused into our inner being. And as a result, this element works in us. It's not a passive element. It's a dynamic working element. It works in us day by day to gradually discharge our old self, our old man, and to renew us, to make us a new man in God's image. This is what God wants to do for every one of his lovers, his seekers. He doesn't want us to pursue human perfection,
right,
by high ethical attainment. God wants us to open ourselves to him and to behold him from within so that he can impart himself with his divine element into our being.
This is a theme that Watchman Nee also makes very frequently in his ministry, that man as a kind of a vessel or a container, in a sense, can only be full of one thing at a time. And so if our vessel, our container, is full of our own attainments, our own righteousness, our own achievements, there's just no room for God to be able to add himself. And so hence the need is there for this stripping work or this emptying out work to also take place before the filling can have a chance.
And that is exactly what we see in Job. Here we see a man who's been stripped. You may say he's been broken down. But this is not God's goal, just to strip us, consume us, and
right,
break us down.
Right.
It's necessary, but it's only the preparation for God to come to us, to enlighten us, and to reveal himself to us through his word so that we can behold him and he can add his element into our being.
He referred to, at the end of his speaking there, verse we've talked about many times, but it's going to be the subject of our final segment today as well, that's 2 Corinthians 3:18. It makes his point so clearly. But we all with unveiled face, beholding and reflecting like a mirror the glory of the Lord, are being transformed, as you said, Bob, into the same image from glory to glory. This is kind of a progression of the transformation, isn't it? Glory to glory.
That's right.
Even as from the Lord Spirit. So it all takes place in the seeing, in the beholding. Something, we're not just beholding and reflecting, there's an imparting that's going on. And that's what we want to key on in this last portion. Here's Witness Lee once more.
The very God whom Job saw was also the Spirit, but at his time, God was still in his original state. He had his attributes, he had his divine element, the divinity, but no incarnation, no human living, nothing related to humanity. But today, according to 2 Corinthians 3:18, the very God whom we are looking at is much richer in his ingredients. So the more look at him, the more we receive his ingredients into our being, which becomes our inner supply to work over us, to discharge the old, and to make us new. This is transformation. This is to transform us into God's image. So to see God should issue in the transformation of our being into God's image. But I don't believe by that time when Job said, aha, my eyes see you. When he said that, I don't know how much he realized. But today, we the readers of Job's writing should have further realization than what he had. Anyhow, his suffering did issue in one thing, that he saw God. He saw God. In what way, this is hard to tell. In a physical way or in a spiritual revelation way, we don't know. But today, we know our way of looking at God is altogether a matter in the spirit. Well, by reading their talks, their debates, you could realize they were not in this realm and they are not watching on this way. They were watching on the way of the tree of knowledge. So not much seeing God to receive him that they could be transformed into his being. we should have such a clear comparison.
Bob, I feel like we've really been treated to something very special today, as we frequently are in this ministry, because we have not just had an exposition of a difficult to understand Old Testament passage in a way that has, you know, made it applicable and relevant, but we've seen something very clearly, that we need to look at the book of Job through the lens of 2 Corinthians 3:18. I mean, it takes the Bible to understand the Bible. That's, I think, the point that really struck me here.
That's a very striking point. Witness Lee relies on this verse in the New Testament, where Paul says that he and his co-workers, with unveiled face, they were beholding and reflecting the glory of the Lord. They were seeing something of the Lord, beholding him, not in a physical way, but in their spirit. And the Lord whom they were beholding is the Spirit,
right,
the transforming Spirit, the Spirit who is called the life-giving Spirit in another epistle of Paul, the Spirit who gives life, who imparts God himself into our being for our gradual transformation into his image from glory to glory. This is a great point, that the God whom we look at today is the God who has passed through incarnation, human living, crucifixion, resurrection, and ascension, and has been consummated to be the Lord Spirit. This is the God we look at today. When Job saw God, God had not yet passed through these processes. So God was only divine. He had only one element, the divine element. But today, the God who we behold as the Lord Spirit, the glorified Jesus Christ, is full of ingredients. He has humanity, he has human living, he has the all-inclusive death on the cross, and he has a wonderful resurrection. All are included in this Spirit, and it's with these ingredients that he operates in us to discharge all our old elements and add God into our being to transform us into his image. So these are two great lights, I would say, that we can apply 2 Corinthians 3:18 to understand Job 42 verse 5.
Right.
What does it mean to behold God or to see God? It's right here in the New Testament. And who is the God today whom we behold? He's the Lord Spirit.
I just want to go back and listen to all of this again and let it permeate, saturate, and even pickle me a little bit more, Bob, because I think we're really onto something that is very close to where God is trying to bring all of his people today, our need to see him, that we could be brought into this kind of transformation process.
That's right, Chris. And I just like to add one more thing. The way to see the Lord is to spend time with him, to get away from all the busy things that we're, in a sense, pursuing in our life,
right,
to spend time with him and to read his word with an open heart, with a prayerful spirit. Then, through his word and in our spirit, we will see God himself. We will see the Lord and be transformed by him.
Wow. Bob, thank you very much for your fellowship today. Really enjoyed it.
It's a great pleasure, Chris.
Well, our time is up. For Bob Danker, I'm Chris Wild. Thanks so much for listening today.